Voice of Indonesia.
Hello listener, how are you? I'm Stefanus, will be in here with you for the next 60 minutes. We will present various programs for you, like the news, commentary, light info, and also pop songs from Indonesia. And listener, we will have first the news, so stay tuned with us in Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia for the world, on the frequencies of 3325 kHz and voinews.id.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia with the news.
Here is the news first, the headlines. President Joko Widodo asked BPN to use digital service system. Vice President Yusuf Kala and Rector of the Hiroshima University, Mitsuo Ochi, discussed cooperation. Now the news in details. President Joko Widodo asked the Ministry of Agrarian and Spatial Planning National Land Agency, BPN, to immediately use a digital service system. He hopes that the digital-based service system can make it easier for people to access land services. The request was affirmed by President Joko Widodo when inaugurating the National Working Meeting of the Ministry of Agrarian and Spatial Planning State Land Agency in 2019 at the State Palace in Jakarta on Wednesday. As reported by Antara News Agency, President Joko Widodo said that land services also need to be adapted to technological advances so that people are easier to access. In addition, this digital system will also help reduce the long queue of people in land offices. Vice President Yusuf Kala received a visit from Hiroshima, Japan, Director Mitsuo Ochi in Jakarta on Wednesday. The meeting was a follow-up of cooperative relations in the field of education between Hiroshima University and universities in Indonesia. One of them is Hasanuddin University in Makassar, South Sulawesi. As reported by Antara News Agency, Mitsuo Ochi said that Hiroshima University wants cooperation in the field of education with Indonesia to be further enhanced. He also stated that currently there are 159 Indonesian students studying at Hiroshima University. In addition, there were 221 doctoral degrees awarded by the University of Hiroshima to Indonesian students. Mitsuo Ochi added 221 doctoral degrees given to students included engineering and medicine. Russian Ambassador to Indonesia Lyudmila Georgievna Vorobieva appreciated Indonesia's economic growth of 5.17% in 2018 amid global challenges and uncertainty. She said in Jakarta on Wednesday that regarding Indonesia's economic growth, Russia as a trading partner is very happy to see a sustainable increase. The growth of the Russian economy is slightly lower than that of Indonesia. As reported by Antara News Agency, Ambassador Lyudmila assessed that the achievement of Indonesia's sustainable economic growth could be the basis for improving economic relations. Meanwhile, Minister of Trade Enggar Tjahto Lukita said that Indonesia's economic growth of 5.17% in 2018 was appreciated by many parties. Indonesia and Japan improve cooperation. The detail is reported by Stephen.
The Japanese ambassador, Ishu Masafumi, remarked upon the enduring friendship between Japan and Indonesia would see greater future investment and greater cooperation between the two nations. At a Jakarta Press Club event, Mr. Ishii, in his speech towards a joint partnership, outlined the ways in which Japan would be able to assist in the rise of Indonesia as a developing global power. Mr. Ishii said he expected both Japan and Indonesia to be second-tier countries, only behind the US, China, and India in economic power.
Last year, he predicted the state of Indonesia and Japan around the year 2045, which is the 100-year anniversary of Indonesian independence, to find out that Indonesia's GDP, if the present of time continues, will easily become world number 5, around 2045. And if they speed it up for 10 years at 6%, then they will be over Japan. They will be number 4.
In this speech, the ambassador outlined how Japan would invest more in infrastructure and in vocational education to bolster the productivity of the nation. In particular, he said Japan would focus investment on improved public transportation and in assisting economic development of the fishing industry of the outer western islands.
I need to mention a few things about Japan. Java, Northern Line, Jakarta-Surabaya, largest and most important train network, is 750 kilometers. Now it's taking 11 hours, Surabaya, and we are asked to make it half, and I think we can do it. So now we are in the process of making a certain decision whether to move to the feasibility study. I think sometime in March, and I think the direction we are moving forward is to do it.
With the MRT mooted to open in a month, the ambassador said that Jakarta would no longer be the capital with the largest population without a subway, predicting one day the city will have a network of subways comparable to Mumbai.
This news comes to you from RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Director General of International Trade Negotiation of Trade Ministry, Iman Pambagio, is optimistic that the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnerships, RCEP, negotiations will be concluded by the end of the year. However, Pambagio at the Foreign Policy Community of Indonesia event on Wednesday said that there were substantial obstacles between nations that needed to be ironed out before there was agreement among the 16 nations involved in negotiations. The RCEP could create a comprehensive free trade agreement among the Asian countries, China, India, Japan, Korea, Australia, and New Zealand, involving a combined GDP of $23.8 trillion, representing more than 40% of the world's population. Among the largest barriers to agreement were domestic issues encroaching on multilateral negotiations, a trust deficit between nations, and the struggle to obtain a consistent Asian consensus positions on specific issues. Going into the sixth year of negotiation, the minister is confident that the RCEP will not suffer the fate of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, with his negotiation of the agreement focusing on achieving consensus through achievable objective. The three main tenets of the agreement involve agreements on market access of trading in goods and services, rules in regards to government regulation of intellectual property, e-commerce and products of origin, and economic and technical cooperation between nation-states. Minister of Industry Erlangga Hartarto is optimistic that investment and expansions will increase in 2019 compared with last year. At the 2019 Eurocharm Indonesia Economic and Investment Outlook in Jakarta on Wednesday, Minister Erlangga said that even though in the last quarter there was economic turbulence with currency fluctuations and trade war, now it is obvious that the optimism has been built. As quoted by Antara News Agency, the minister stated that by having good cooperation between the Ministry of Industry and the Investment Coordinating Board, several investors in strategic sectors, such as the petrochemical and steel industries, began to enter Indonesia. Securing funding for environmentally friendly projects has not been a straightforward process for Indonesian companies and organizations, many of which are unaware that certain standards need to be fulfilled before applying for funding for green energy projects at international and multilateral organizations. The standards are considered basic, write clear proposals, and comply with the principles of equal opportunities for all genders and minority groups. As quoted by JakartaPost.com on Thursday, the United Nations through its Green Climate Fund, GCF, for example, requires proposals to be aligned with national development priorities and gender equality standards and accommodate the needs of vulnerable groups. In Indonesia, the GCF has been working with Finance Ministry's Fiscal Policies Office and Intergovernmental Organizations Global Green Growth Institute, GGGI, since 2017. Listener, that was the news. I'm Nuka Kusumawati.
Hello, listener. Nice to be with you again in our Gil program commentary. For today's topic is Indonesia and Switzerland signed reciprocal legal aid agreement. Well, listener, after going through various diplomacy, including two-round negotiation between Indonesia and Switzerland, finally, Mutual Legal Assistance Agreement, MLA, was signed by Minister of Law and Human Rights, Yasona Lawli, and Swiss Minister of Justice, Karin Keller-Sutter, at the Bad Hot Bern, Switzerland, on Monday. The agreement, consisting of 39 articles, regulates legal assistance regarding tracking, freezing, confiscation and seizure of assets resulting from crime. The scope of this broad range of criminal reciprocal assistance is an important part of supporting the process of criminal law in the requesting country. This agreement is an attempt by the Indonesian government to ensure that Indonesian citizens or legal entities comply with Indonesian tax regulation and avoid tax crimes. Minister Yasona said that the MLA agreement could be used to combat crime in the taxation sector. To reach the crime that has been committed before the entry into force of the agreement, Indonesia proposes that the agreement is to adhere to retroactive principle. For Indonesia, this agreement is the 10th MLA. Previously, Indonesia signed MLA with ASEAN, Australia, Hong Kong, China, South Korea, India, Vietnam, United Arab Emirates, and Iran. As for Switzerland, this agreement is the 14th MLA with non-European countries. This signing will be beneficial for the two countries, especially for Indonesia, to enforce the law against corruption, money laundering, and tax criminality. So far, cases related to the money laundering and tax crimes had been difficult to disclose due to the constraint on access and coverage. With the signing of the MLA, this will make it easier to track and recover assets resulting from criminal acts stored in Switzerland. Quoted from the Gabriel Saxman's research in 2017, the amount of global assets in the tax haven countries reached 10% of the global GDP equivalent to 800,000 trillion rupiah. Of the amount, 32,000 trillion rupiah is deposited in Switzerland. Therefore, the Indonesian government has a strong reason to sign MLA with Switzerland and immediately implement it. Well, listener, that was commentary read by Rahmana. Thanks for listening.
Voice of Indonesia.
Hello, listener. Nice to be with you again in our good program, Today in History. Well, Today in History starts for an event on February 7th, 1965, when the United States bombed North Vietnam. After evacuating the last U.S. families in Vietnam, the U.S. Air Force began to launch air attack North Vietnam on February 7, 1965. The goal of the U.S. and the government of South Vietnam was to destroy supply network with weapons and fuel for the communists of North Vietnam. The bombing marked the beginning of the Second Indochina War. In March 1965, thousands of the U.S. Marines in South Vietnam were at war against North Vietnam. And the next event is that in 1986, Haiti's rebellion enforced the authority of President Jean-Claude Duvalier. Jean-Claude Duvalier was president of Haiti from 1971 until he was overthrown by rebellion in 1986. He replaced his father, François Papadoc, the father as dictator of Haiti since his father's death in 1971. The rebellion of Haiti's people was the answer and protest for 3 months on political and economic operation by an authoritarian government that was conducted by Jean-Claude Duvalier. Because of his people rebellion, Haiti's dictator ran away along with his family and lived in France. Duvalier's departure also took $1 billion from the fund that was embezzled by him from Haiti. And the last event is that in 1992, Maastricht Agreement was signed. Maastricht Agreement or European Union Agreement was signed on February 7, 1992 by 12 member countries of European people in Maastricht, the Netherlands. The draft of the Maastricht Agreement was arranged in the meeting of European Council on December 9 until 10, 1991 in Maastricht. The Maastricht Agreement encouraged the fall of Euro and created 3 pillars of European Union, namely European people, mutual foreign policy, security and justice, and homeland affairs. Well, listener, that was Today in History, read by Rahmana. Thanks for listening.
Selalu meresap beragung.
Listener, you're still with us in the Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia for the world, on 3325 kHz and voinews.id. Next, we are going to present to you My Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, welcome to My Indonesia. Today's topic titled, Peat Restoration Agency tries aerohydroculture technology at peatland in Siak Regency, Riau Province. The Peat Restoration Agency conducted a technology trial of aerohydroculture on a number of peatlands in Siak Regency, Riau Province, to keep the land wet. Aerohydroculture is a culture system for peat plants that can be a solution to maintain plant productivity on peat land while maintaining peat water level. The system is in accordance with Government Regulation No. 57 of 2016, which confirmed that the groundwater level on peat land must be maintained so as not to exceed 40 cm below the surface of the land. The basic is very important to maintain the wetness level of the peatland. For several stakeholders and managers of peatland cultivation, the provision is a challenge in maintaining productivity of the plant. On the other hand, the risk of draining peatlands in addition to causing subsidence is also prone to fire. In addition, peat ecosystems are wetlands and there needs to be a friendly and sustainable management that does not damage the plants. Head of the Peat Restoration Agency, Nazir Fuad in Siak, said on Monday, February 4, that there had been many technological choices that had been developed in several places in Indonesia to increase the productivity of community peat crops so that the land remain wet. Fertilization can also be reduced with this technology. According to Nazir Fuad, there were a number of technologies presented at the workshop in Siak for the application of the method, including from the Indonesian Institute of Sciences and the Research and Development of the Ministry of Environment and Forestry. Furthermore, the technology will be tested in Siak. Nazir Fuad revealed, this kind of workshop was important as a place to share knowledge and methodology related to peatland management so as not to violate the government's rules and regulation. On the other hand, it provides benefits both economically and ecologically for those engaged in peatland cultivation. The workshop, which was completed with a direct visit to the practice area at community plantations in Benteng Hulu and Kota Ringin, Mempura, Siak, became a direct example of the implementation of the aerohydroculture. The Siak regional government supports the innovation of the aerohydroculture system, especially since most of peat areas in Siak are used for plantations. That was My Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
Tak tahu apa yang kau cari. semua tak pasti. Karismamu menghilang, tak tahu apa yang terjadi. Semua tak pasti.
You are still with us in Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia for the world, on 3325 kHz and voinews.id. Listener, next we are going to invite you to visit various places of Indonesia to know about its tourism objects or some local wisdom that we have only on Indonesian Wonder.
Hello listener, welcome to Indonesian Wonder, a daily segment featuring tourism, culinary art, fine art, and culture from various regions across Indonesia. In today's edition, we will introduce you to Lentok Tanjung Culinary. Stay tuned. Lentok Tanjung is one of the delicious culineries in Kudus. Kudus is one of regencies in Central Java. The regency is widely known as the biggest clove-flavored cigarettes producer and the city of Muslim students. Kudus was the center of Islamic development in the middle century. It is seen from the existing of the graves of Sunan, or Islamic missionary in Java, are among others Sunan Kudus and Sunan Muria Graves. There are many exciting tourism sites you can visit in Kudus, such as Mount Muria, Kretek or Cigarette Museum, Simpang Tujuh, and Kudus Tower. The name of the special culinary of Kudus consists of the words lentok and tanjung. Lentok or lontong is a food made of rice wrapped by banana leaves, while Tanjung or Tanjung Karang is a village in Jati sub-district, Kudus Regency. The culinary was firstly made from the Jati village. However, as time goes by, Lentok Tanjung is currently peddled not only in Kudus, but also in other regions in Indonesia. Lentok Tanjung culinary is mainly made of lontong. The uniqueness of food is the size of lontong, which is the same as an adult's leg. One portion of Lentok Tanjung consists of small slices of lontong with the side dishes of young jackfruit, tofu and tempeh poured by coconut milk and sprinkled by fried onion. The culinary is more delicious when eaten in warm. Lentok Tanjung is suitable to serve as breakfast menu. We do not need a spoon to eat it, but people in Kudus usually using suru or a spoon of banana leaf. Lentok is more delicious to eat with the side dishes such as quail egg satay, intestine satay, and crackers. To taste Lentok Tanjung, you can visit Tanjung Karang Village, Jati Sub-District, Kudus City. It has a affordable price, about 15,000 until 20,000 rupiah per portion. Listener, that was our segment of Indonesian Wonder for today, featuring Lentok Tanjung Culinary. Thank you for listening.
Voice of Indonesia.
Semakin menyerang kalaulah ku dapat membaca pikiranmu dengan sayap pengharapanku ingin terbang jauh. Biar awan pun gelisah, daun-daun jatuh berguguran, namun cintamu kasih terbit laksana bintang yang bersinar cerah menerangi jiwaku. Andaikan ku dapat bersinar cerah menerangi jiwaku.
Listener, thank you. You're still with us in the Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia for the world, on 3325 kHz and voinews.id.
Listener, welcome back to Miscellany. Today's topic titled UGM Students Produce Local Emergency Light. Two students of Gajah Mada University, or UGM, succeeded in developing energy-saving emergency light. They have produced 1,000 units of light and marketed them to various regions across Indonesia. The light, which is named La Helis, meaning an energy-saving lamp, is developed by two students of UGM, namely Fadeli Nur Hafiza, age 20, who studies at Mechanical Engineering Department, and a master student of Agricultural Department named Saida Nur Hafiza, age 23. Both of them are sisters from Blora Regency, Central Java. Fadila said that La Helis has been developed since the beginning of 2017 and produced in great quantity since August 2017. Until 2019, the light, which has been produced massively until 8,000 units, has been marketed to various regions across Indonesia. Fadila explained that, at first, the emergency light was produced to replace candles due to the power outage that often took place at night in Blora. According to her, most of Blora residents still use candles during power outage. However, using candles to support the lighting during power outage is hazardous because it can potentially cause fire. Meanwhile, Chaida Nur Hafiza pointed out that the lights can turn on more than 12 hours by only using the AA 1.5 volt batteries. The power of the light is higher than other lights because it uses the right component named trafoferrite. Therefore, the light can last longer. It is also an energy-saving light as its component, trafoferrite, is made of light waste which is not used anymore. The light developed in 3 and 9 watt light is also designed minimally and featured with flexible switch on which people can bring anywhere and use anytime without relying on the electricity from the state electric company or PLN. Chaida added that the light is designed simply and practically without having to be charged. It is enough to use battery to replace candles. The 3-watt light costs 50,000 rupiah and the 9-watt one costs 90,000 rupiah. Currently, their light production has provided job opportunities for the local people of Blora. Each day, they can produce 15 up to 20 lights. That was miscellany.
Voice of Indonesia.
Bangun dari tidurku.
Listener, you're still with us in the Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia for the world. Next, we are going to present to you the music corner, so stay tuned.
Voice of Indonesia.
Hello listener, welcome back to Music Corner. Today we present you to a song from Rin Jamain. The singer with full name Rin Indrianti Jamain was known as an Indonesian female jazz singer. She began her career by performing jazz songs when attended the TVRI program in the 1970s. After that, in 1976, she completed recording her first album with Jack Lesmana, a jazz figure in Indonesia, with a leading song titled Api Asmara. The album is the same title with the song, namely Api Asmara. The song, which was composed by Yahya, tells the story of a woman who wants her lover to help her to erase all the bitter memories she has ever experienced. Well, listener, let's enjoy the song Api Asmara by Rin Jamain.
Yeah.
Voice of Indonesia. Voice of Indonesia.
Bunga mawar yang merah dahulu.
All right, listener, it's all that we have in English program. Thank you very much for listening, but stay tuned with us in the Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia for the World on 3325 kHz and voinews.id. In the meantime, do not forget to like and comment on our Facebook fan page, The Voice of Indonesia, or follow and mention us at Twitter, at @voiindonesia, and send us email on voi@voinews.id.